He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me.
Happy birthday, Mickey Gilley. I think I would have used more of a springy song, though, Crash. First beautiful day of this late winter. Looking out on the Hudson River now, watching the snow and the icebergs melt. I think we've weathered yet another one. I didn't know if I would survive it, but we did. So happy Monday, March the 9th. 8 minutes after 10 o'clock. Noam, I heard you reporting that the mayor was late again to that St. Patrick's parade out in Queens.
Yeah, in the Rockaways, yeah.
And a heckler called him the worst mayor ever?
Well, there was a number. It wasn't the only one. There was a few along the way that were screaming, worst mayor ever. Now, if he had shown up in time, those same people may have been yelling the same thing. Don't know. But it didn't help that the parade started 10 minutes late, and he still wasn't there on time.
I don't understand his deal. I really don't. I mean, generally speaking, if you're chronically tardy, it means you really hate going to the event that you're late to. You really hate it. You can't stand it. It's part of the trappings of his office. I don't know what the crowd was, but maybe not his scene. I don't know. But I'm not as worried, ladies and gentlemen, about Mayor de Blasio's chronic tardiness. I'm really not, as much as I'm worried about the fact that murders and shootings are on the increase. So is homelessness. Traffic is absolutely terrible. Subways aren't running as well as they used to just a year or two ago. I'm not making any judgments here, but you have to be wary about where the city is heading right now, even if you're, you know, a moderate like me. You hear my birds in the background.
I do, yeah.
We have a musical accompaniment. My canary and my rescue dove. But, you know, race relations in this town. And ladies and gentlemen, this is my first question for you. Do you think, and I'm going to ask this of the nation itself and of the president, because this is a very important, you know, I think hinge in history right now. Do you think race relations in the city of New York are better or worse than they have been under this mayor? So now you have a mayor who has a mixed-race family, who's very close to the Reverend Al Sharpton, to the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, a man who won overwhelming election here, trouncing poor Joe Loda. I don't know if he got 25% of the total vote, but a huge mandate for Mayor Bill de Blasio. But you have to wonder now, are race relations, I think, central to the city's feeling of well-being is the sense that traditionally New York is a place where, you know, we take the blinders off in this town. We make no distinction in this town. That is white, black, yellow, brown, you know, red, whatever color you identify with. This is a town where achievement is celebrated. This is a town where success is envied and people want to emulate it. But is this a town that's coming a bit unhinged? I think that that's a fair question. I don't mean to start on this pretty pre-spring day in a pessimistic way, but I have to tell you, I was watching, and I'm sure most of you saw at least a clip from Sunday's historic celebration, the commemoration of the 50th anniversary of Bloody Sunday down in Alabama, where the cops beat and hosed the unarmed civil rights demonstrators demanding equal rights and voting rights, etc. So that was happening. We watched this celebration, this commemoration of this historic event. It was very, very impressive. But at the same time, on Sunday, if you watched any of the news programs, it was hard to miss that video from Oklahoma University. Did you see that one? the fraternity boys singing the racist ditties about ends never being admitted to SAE, the Sigma Alpha Epsilon, their fraternity. So, you know, what I'm asking of the city, I could ask also of the nation itself. You know, the progress of race in America, especially with our first black president. Are we better off in terms of race relations now than we were, or are we worse off? Are the people that we elected, the first black president in history, this very progressive mayor who has obviously a mixed race family, you know, are we any better in the city now? That video, you know, the casual racism displayed in that video. I don't want to hear. I see the phones are ringing. 866 Geraldo, the number, give me a call. The video from the University of Oklahoma is that SAE, the Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity chapter, singing that song with such verve, with such glee. You know, and to see it on the same newscast as the commemoration of Selma, you've got to ask, you know, what the president, was his tone about right? I mean, it was very measured, his remarks. He praised the progress that we have made in the last half century, but he talked about all the work that needs to be done. And my goodness, I'm sorry. I believe that the cops should have been exonerated in Ferguson. I thought that was the correct decision. The shooting of Michael Brown was a tragedy. But when you saw the Justice Department report on what was going on in Ferguson, Missouri, and how blacks account for 93% of all the arrests that are made, and that the arrests are used essentially to fund the city of Ferguson, those fines, $100 fines that become $1,000 fines when they're not paid, you know, you really have to ask. I mean, it's freaky, I think, how ingrained bad habits are. The casual racism of those frat boys, I mean, it's a long way from lynching and the jury, the legal segregation of Dixie. But I think they share a common root in the instinct that one group is different than and less than the other. I mean, maybe we haven't progressed very far from that. So we're talking about race relations. I'm going to start with Linda. Thank you, Linda, for calling. What's on your mind today?
Buenos días, Geraldo.
Buenos días, mi amor.
Buenos días. Listen, I don't know whether you're running a bird store there or what, but it's good. My idea of race relations in this country, I'm white, I'm 62. I feel kind of hopeless about it, not from the standpoint of black people, but from a lot of the white people, even the ones, the lefties that I know. I think it is more or less hopeless in a certain extent, but I do have a metaphor or an analogy. It's as though a leg had been amputated. Let's not say who did it or when it was done. And the only improvement can be whatever advancements there are in reconstructing a leg so that it is nearly normally functioning, but it will never be forgotten, the damage. But the only hope is to try to reconstitute as fully functional a leg as possible.
Well, I get the metaphor here, but you have to be more personal about it. I need to know really what you think about race relations. I get the leg comparison, but you got to tell me what you're thinking in your heart.
I think anything nearing perfection is virtually impossible at this point. And I think that people who need to do something, whether they're black or white, feel so despairing about it that they're not doing what they need to be doing. They think it's not worth the effort. I applaud those who are trying their best because I think they're the only hope for the country. But I think it's a very, very difficult situation, and has never been a national serious dialogue about it amongst serious people.
So is it better or worse under Obama?
Oh, gosh. I think it's worse in the sense that more could have been done, and it exposes how seriously wrong things have gone. But I do not think it's Mr. Obama's fault. However, I would not have picked him as an ideal, quote, black candidate for the presidency of the United States. I don't think he has a personality that is terribly attractive to the people who are opposed to improving race relations in the United States. And I don't fault Mr. Obama for that. I just think that he should have considered what his presidency might produce, and it wasn't what he thought it would produce.
I think he may have been as naive. Thank you for a very thoughtful call there. I didn't mean to cut you off. I think that he's so cool, too cool for school. But I think that he was right. I was very measured in, yes, of course, progress has been dramatic, but much needs to be done. And if everybody, I don't know, do you have black friends? If you're black, do you have white friends? I mean, how much does race play a part in your own life? Is race really better? Is it worse? Does it affect the way you think about candidates? Does it affect the way you think about issues? You know, I think that it's fair to ask now, as the presidency of the 44th man to occupy the White House winds down and we're getting ready. And I want to talk about Hillary, too, as the show progresses. But I'm delighted that you want to get involved in this one. 866-HERALDO.
Geraldo, live, local, today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
You know, no, my favorite holiday is the Breastquinox. when the winter coats come off and spring arrives. So what's on your mind, ladies and gentlemen? I'll tell you what's on mine. Are race relations better or worse under Mayor de Blasio and under President Obama? Better or worse? Obviously, you have the 50th anniversary of the march on the Edmund Pettus Bridge down in Selma, Alabama, and so much has happened since then. You also have the bitter reminder that not far from that bridge just a year or so ago, you had a lawsuit filed that helped rid the South of the special prohibitions against changing voter eligibility. So you had kind of a setback to the Voting Rights Act that passed as a result of Selma 50 years ago. Then you've had all these shootings of the unarmed black men, and you've had the revenge killing, the savage assassination of the two cops here in New York and elsewhere. You've got some real evidence of not only a pervasive racial bias in places like fraternities, but also real bitterness on both sides of the black-white divide, certainly. So what are you thinking about? Let's start with a man who's really in the middle of a lot of things. He's from Rikers Island, a correction officer there. Ray's on the line. What's up, Ray?
Brother, good morning. How are you?
Thanks for calling.
I'm doing well. Listen, first things first, you're well-traveled. You're half Jewish, half Puerto Rican, correct, sir?
I am.
Okay.
I am all of the above.
Okay. That being said, and just bear with me, my friend. The black community, I'm Puerto Rican, born and raised in Bedford-Stuyvesant. I'm retiring soon from the department. It's been wonderful. Many black friends, I've traveled all over the place. What the black community has to do, I'm afraid to say this, really, to be not politically correct, but they got to let go, brother. They got to let go of what occurred 200, 300, 400 years ago. And I'm going to tell you why. Again, I'm going to go back to my point with you being a well-traveled person. How many American Indians do you know?
I know a fair amount, just from covering the various stories on reservations and so forth. I mean, we don't hang out. I mean, I don't know a lot of them here in town.
How many Afro-Americans do you know? How many Puerto Ricans? I know one. I know one American Indian. I know one.
So what's the point, Ray, that we hang out with the people that look like us?
No, not at all, my friend. What I'm saying is that the black community has to let go, and they have to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and just not forget about the past, obviously. Because it was basically genocide what occurred to them. But, you can't be using what occurred 200, 300, 400 years ago as a crutch.
You know, I'm thinking, I have you on the line here. Let me ask, what's race relations in prison like? I mean, I just got out of San Quentin. I mean, not got out, but I just did a story in San Quentin about Scott Peterson and death row in California. And there's still a divide there. You got the Mexican mafia. You got the various black bloods, Crips, et cetera. You've got the Nazi affiliated groups for some of the white prisoners. What's the scene in Rikers?
Well, you have that to a certain extent. You do. You have the Latin Kings and the Nietas, which is Latino gangs. You have, lately you've been having a nice little influx of Mexicans coming in, the bloods for the most part. African Americans and the Crips. But, you know, you got to remember that San Quentin, those guys are basically living there for an indefinite time. And, you know, the correction department here in New York, unless you're sentenced, you're only doing about 8 months. So you have your little cliques, but it's not as volatile as it is when you have to live with the next person for the next 20-odd years. You know, you see gang-on-gang violence because something that occurred in the street. You know, it's not as prevalent, I would say, as it is in other parts of the country.
Well, Ray, where are you going to retire to?
You know what? To be honest with you, brother, I'm looking at Nevada.
You're going to lose all your money. I appreciate you coming on, Ray. Thanks a lot. All right, here in Westchester, Patricia. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, good morning, Geraldo.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I think that everything really has, in the last maybe 6-7 years, really has degenerated because the politicians that we have are only really representing the people that voted for them. For instance, in the 2012 presidential election, the president said, I can't be bothered. This is a quote. He said, I can't be bothered going and campaigning, you know, amongst white, blue-collar workers. He goes, they're not voting for me anyway. See, that's the point.
Wasn't that Mitt Romney that said that?
No. It was President Obama.
I know Mitt Romney said he's not going to campaign with the 47% who think they're entitled to stuff.
No, but the president specifically cited white middle-class workers. He said they're not voting.
I don't know that quote. I mean, I don't
I'm just making
deny
an
it.
Example
I just
that the whole
have not heard
tone,
it.
The whole tone is set at the top.
So you think what about the president? Be specific. What do you think? You think this president is a racialist?
I think he himself personally like is not. I don't feel that in him, but I think that he uses it when he wants.
Well, is the converse also true that people who may not even be racists have just this little thing about his blackness that affects how they feel about him?
To me, I really think that's silly. And I think also you were wrong on the Voting Rights Act because only the formula was changed. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court found that the state of Massachusetts today is as bad as Mississippi was in 1960. And Mississippi and Alabama and all those states are in compliance. That was the finding of the Supreme Court.
Okay, Patricia, I appreciate your call. I mean, I don't vouch for your legal analysis, but I appreciate the call. And here in Manhattan, it's Will on the line. What's up, Will?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good.
Let me just say this here first of all, Rob.
Okay, man.
Ray, the correction officer, should wait until he becomes world-traveled before he get on the radio and start crazy.
I'm sure he's listening.
Number one, Indians always say they never had a Martin Luther King to plead their case, you know. They said they don't have that kind of leader to get them on the front burner like everybody, but those people were decimated. A third Holocaust, you know what I'm saying? Secondly, I don't think African Americans should turn loose anything. Are you there?
Yeah, I am, but I don't understand what that means. What do you mean turn loose?
I don't think they should forget anything. You know, the Jews bring up the Holocaust all the time, and we should also...
Too often, in my view. Much too often. They dilute it by bringing it up whenever they don't agree with somebody.
They both should.
Not they. I'm talking about Netanyahu specifically.
Well, I'm saying we both should bring it up because those elements that did it are still out there. The same type of mindset.
But do you think, answer my question, Will, is it better or worse under de Blasio and Obama race relations? Which way is it going?
The reason is because this is like the
first. Which way is it going? You got to answer the question.
I'm trying to tell you, this is like the first day of Jackie Robinson in baseball. This is like the first day of Jack Johnson fighting white people. This is what it is. This is the reaction. I'm curious to see what's going to happen when the Obamas move out of the White House. Will they find a sneaky way to demolish it and build a new one?
Oh, my God.
On the air, online, and on iHeart.com. We are 77 WABC. Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77 WABC.
There'll never be a s***, there'll never be a s***, you're hanging from a tree, but it'll never stop with me, there'll never be.
The thing that really bothers me, that's the song that they were singing, the ditty, they were singing the racist ditty that they were singing, caught on someone's cell phone, posted, didn't take long for the national... Sigma Alpha Epsilon SAE fraternity organization to shut down the chapter at the University of Oklahoma. But it was so, I just want you to hear it one more time and see how enthusiastically, obviously the bleeps are the N-word, so you can figure out what's being said, how enthusiastically these frat boys at the University of Oklahoma are embracing the most vile kind of racism. Listen.
There'll never be an assing. There'll never be an assing. You're hanging from a tree, but it'll never stop with me. There'll never be.
I mean, it's just, let me tell you a quick story about SAE and me. So my friend Vic Furio, my oldest friend, he went to West Islip. I was from West Babylon High School, but we worked together on the Highway Department, Town of Babylon Highway Department. He's actually in North Babylon, so it was Highway Department. We were working in, after high school. He went off to the University of Utah. Make a long story short, I visited him out there, and I was thinking about going to school out there, so he took me to his fraternity. Vic, very cool guy, very a sharp dresser. He took me to the fraternity, and I was heading on my way to Arizona, and I thought that a reference from the SAE, Vic was an SAE, a big fraternity guy there, and that's what I found attractive about college. So I went to the University of Arizona chapter of the SAE, and those guys laughed me off. They absolutely laughed me off. And the funny thing is I was the goalie on the lacrosse team, and the captain of the lacrosse team was an SAE, and even he couldn't get me any traction in that fraternity. It was kind of eye-opening to me. I hadn't really been exposed to kind of institutional racism before, and I like to think that's why they rejected me, because I wasn't from the group that most of them were from. But to see this now, to see this casual, and that was 50 years ago, so to see, you know, how they embrace this kind of hateful separation and do it in a way with such verve, obviously everybody says stuff. Everybody listening right now says stuff. And about whether you're black, white, whatever you are, you say stuff or you think stuff about people of the other race. But to let it go that far where it becomes incorporated into the very, elan, the very spirit of the SAE chapter at the University of Oklahoma shows, it is a window into, it is every bit as telling in its own way as some of these shocking police videos that show cops shooting unarmed, usually black or brown men. There's that case in Pasco, Washington, involving the Latino not getting as much traction. But you know what I mean? It's just, I'm telling you, it's very, it's depressing. It's depressing to me that it's gotten this far, buddy.
Well, and to the credit of the school, they've really reacted awfully quickly. But, you can't stomp that out if people feel that way and they're going to sit there and sing it like a beer song on a bus on a trip.
But, I mean, isn't that amazing that they still would do that? You know, the reason I'm talking about all this, I mean, aside from the obvious news pegs, ladies and gentlemen, of the march on the Pettus Bridge, the Selma stuff 50 years later, and this Oklahoma thing, is the CNN poll just came out that said 40% of Americans believe race relations during the Obama presidency have gotten worse. So 40% say it's gotten worse, 15% say it's gotten better. That's kind of depressing, isn't it? I mean, we did this great thing. We elected a black president, and then we seem to be going backwards, at least in the minds of three times as many people as think we're going forward.
Who were they polling there? That was just a straight shot of Americans?
It just says Americans. It's the CNN ORC. I don't know what ORC is, but, CNN is pretty much down the middle. I don't think they stacked the deck on this particular thing. I've been talking about the race relations under the first black president. I want to get to our first electable female president and Hillary Clinton and all the things that are dragging at her right now. But let me take your calls. 866 Geraldo, are race relations better or worse under Mayor de Blasio and President Obama? It's Cassius in Brooklyn. What are you thinking about, buddy? Thanks for calling.
Hello, Geraldo. How you doing?
Good. I had a good weekend.
I just a small little detail. I got to tell you, when you're on hold there, you can barely hear what you're saying. It really makes it confusing.
Well, hey, Gene, jack up the people on hold. But sorry about that, Cassie. What else?
Yeah, I think we've been trying to have this discussion for so many years, and we never seem to get anywhere. It's because we're always afraid to really talk about the truth. The truth is that minorities in our nation, they're holding on to so much anger and bitterness, and they really don't want to get along with white people. They don't want to have respect for white people, and
What's your background? I mean, Cassius, I think Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali. What's your background?
Yeah, my mom's side is white, and my dad's side is like Mexican and Spanish. So,
Interesting. How'd you get to be named Cassius? Maybe they were Latin scholars.
No, my dad was just a big fan of Muhammad Ali, and
Me too. Yeah. I know him well. So, and what do you think? I mean, coming from a semi-mixed race background yourself, it sounds to me like you're kind of pessimistic.
Yeah, because we have such strange dynamics here in this country where white people came here by our own volition and black folks were brought here against their will. And it's like, I don't know how we're ever going to get over that. as long as black folks are hanging on to, you know,
how old are you, man? How old are you?
Early 40s.
And so it's interesting. It's interesting that you you feel a sense of pessimism. Or does it just not affect your life?
No, it does. I live in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I've been here well over 10 years. And I feel, you know, all of their, just all their misery and depression and anger. And, you know, but it's just become so normalized in our country for them to be so oppositional towards us. And this, all the males, you know, they have this vibe constantly of trying to intimidate, and this hyper macho-ness about the black and Latin males in our country. You know, it's like this constant ego contest, which does nothing to improve relations between the races. You know, I don't know what they think they're doing.
Well, I think that you're a very thoughtful person. I think that a lot of your observations are legit, and also troubling. I think there's a real veracity in a lot of what Cassius just said. Hi, Jay. Thank you for calling. What's up, man? What are you thinking about? Hello, Jay. You there? I know, Jay. Let me try Lou in Long Island. What's up, Lou? What are you thinking about?
Hey, Rollo. Good morning. From what I see, black people feel resentful that Obama, they feel, has been attacked. So that when he became president, I think race relations got a little worse because.
Well, let me ask you this, Lou. Do you think any of the attacks, and I mean any of the attacks, or let me put it, don't you think, let me ask it in the affirmative, don't you think that race has played some role in the president's, in the volatility of the president's approval ratings?
Yes, I do. I do think so. And I think part of his attacks, people who were attacking him, they know that that is the backdrop on which they attack him, because obviously they want to win sort of an electorate picture that works for them. But at the same time, they can't step too hard on that issue and draw attention to themselves as racist. So it's
did you see anything of the parade? Not the parade, the march in Selma on Sunday.
Yeah, I did.
Did you see Al Sharpton there, right behind the president?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing, though, about Obama. He doesn't want to be the black president. He stayed so far away from all these issues from the very beginning. It's almost like he's saying, I'm not black. I'm a white president. And I would think in his second term, he would have wanted to address that. But my sense of Obama is it seems like his whole life, he's identified himself as a white person. And he hasn't really been the spokesperson or the leader for the black people. That's how I see him.
And so what do you think he hangs out with Sharpton? Is Sharpton more legit?
He does it a little bit. In other words, Obama figures, listen, if I'm a black president, I'm not going to get a second term, okay? I got to be a white president, but I got to be enough of a black president not to piss people off. And that's how I see him. I mean, even his interaction with Sharpton is played down. You don't see it that often. You don't see it really. Honestly, you don't see too many pictures or TV images of Obama with Sharpton. You see some, like you'll see it at certain occasions.
No, I every time the president is talking about race, I disagree. I thought that you're very thoughtful observations, so I appreciate the call. But I think every time you hear President Obama, almost every time you hear him talking in a grand stage about race in America, Reverend Sharpton is in the picture somehow. I had a laugh from Sunday's march. There, if just get your hands on yesterday's New York Times. There's a great picture by Doug Mills, the Times photographer, and it's got all the tens of thousands of people coming down the street toward the Edmund Pettus Bridge, and the president's in the front line with his beautiful family, the first lady and Malia and Sasha, and one lady who was over 100, a veteran in those days, a couple of wheelchairs. And in the back row, you see Reverend Al kind of peeking over the president's left shoulder. It reminded me of Bibi Netanyahu imposing himself at the Charlie Debois, what is it, the magazine, the massacre in Paris, that big protest. But he's there. He's always there. Representative John Lewis was there 50 years ago. So it was interesting. I mean, the president was only 4 years old when Selma happened. It's a fascinating story, the arc of American history. I tell you what, I don't want to go... The Bushes marched. Did the Bushes march? I didn't know that. Did the Bush family
George
march?
W. did, yeah.
Who came? Which ones?
George W. was there.
George W. was there. He's not even in the picture.
He was in the front row.
He was, really. That's great. That's great, because I know that Mitch McConnell and John Boehner did not go, and they got gas for it. But I'm not going to criticize anyone who didn't go, because I didn't go. All right, so let me take a break here. I want to talk about this. This is very important, but I want to broaden it to Hillary Clinton. You know, the Clintons didn't show at Selma either, and they got some gas for that. But she is clearly the first really electable female presidential candidate. And the question I want to do for part of the show is whether or not her candidacy has been, wounded in a profound way, in a lasting way. We know it's been staggered by this recent private email scandal, but I don't think that will amount to a hill of beans, me personally. And I also want to talk about Bibi Netanyahu and this whole shtick that Iran represents more of a threat to the United States interests and to the West than ISIS does. I don't think it's even close, and I think he's really trying to distort America's thinking on this issue.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. It is about 5 minutes to 11 o'clock on this March 9th. It's feeling springy. I'm delighted about that. So I really want to shift gears to Hillary. I can do that, though, at the top of the hour so I can get the rest of these calls in. I appreciate them. At 866 Geraldo, here's John on Long Island. What do you think about, John?
Hey, Geraldo. Listen, in regards to your question about has race improved,
right,
you got to understand these frat guys, in a few months, they're going to be the captain of industry. Are you telling me that they're going to forget what they did or what they say? I mean, we got to understand it was only 50 years ago that black folks were allowed to vote. I mean, look at what happened in Selma. So basically, it's just the other day.
So you think what you see in that video is a glimpse into the soul of that category of folk, the frat boy in the big state university.
Right.
I hope you're wrong. I hope you're wrong. I can't argue. I hope you're wrong, but I'm not convinced you're wrong.
Let me say this real quick, Geraldo, before you go.
Go ahead.
I mean, forgetting slavery is tantamount to abusing his niece. And the family members are saying to the little girl as she gets older, try to forget it. Get on with your life. Get on with your life. No, that's 400 years of slavery. The South was built on the black of all.
But John, I even that everything you say is true. What good does it do to a say a 17-year-old black man to remember slavery?
No, what it does actually, it lets him know where they came from and how they can move.
But
on.
If it just generates bitterness and a feeling that woe is me, I have this historic wrong. That's why I can't compete.
No, not necessarily, because in my case, for example, it makes me stronger, and it makes me understand, look, no one is going to give you anything, whatever, you just got to work for it. Just work as hard as you can for it.
All right, if that's your personal philosophy, then it's a philosophy we share, and I appreciate the call, John. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm interested in talking to you all. 866 Geraldo is the number. Hillary and then BB, so it's an action-packed program. Don't touch that dial, 77 WABC.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
47 degrees here in Edgewater, New Jersey. the western blank of the big river, looking up the George Washington Bridge. That could be a traffic report. Traffic moving very smoothly. The birds are chirping. Spring has come. Everything is dripping out here. Dripping and, you know, can't wait until it's legitimately spring. I hate the winter. This was a tough one. I tell you what, let me take two quick race questions and comments, and then I want to move on to Hillary. So let's go to our girlfriend, Laura in Harlem. Hi, honey. What's up? And what are you thinking about?
Geraldo.
Race relations, Geraldo, better or worse under de Blasio and, President Obama?
Well, I would like to address, this, Geraldo. I love you to death. I honestly do. And you're people-oriented. But sometimes, my dear, you do stick your head in the sand.
Uh-oh.
I mean, yes. In terms of these young kids that's chanting at with the frat, where do you think in Ferguson, the finding of Ferguson, where do you think they came from? This is the chief of police. These are the mayors and whatnot. Where do they stem from, Geraldo? Where do they come from? It's scary.
You sound
and
pessimistic.
Ferguson, allow me to finish there, and please afford me the time.
Okay.
The same
all right,
time
but you sound pessimistic.
Gentlemen. It stems from, this is where, you know, it comes from. In terms of us teaching our young blacks, we need to teach them how to survive. Not only to survive, but to make it, and they need to know where they were at. Where they came from to know where they're going. My granddaughter is 22 years old. She just graduated last year with her master's. I sat her down each and every day and taught her where she came from, about Africa, her black history, the whole bit. She's not some evil, angry young black woman. She's proud of herself. And this is what I do with most of the kids in this neighborhood. They need to know the history.
Well, that's why we love you, honey. That's why we love you. That's good. I like that. I like a positive attitude toward it. I like that. Embrace the reality, but go forth, you know, despite the deficiencies in society. This is still the freest society there is.
It's not going forward.
Is what is the is
her going
what,
on to get her doctorates? Is not.
I love
forward.
I love what you're doing with
no,
your
I'm
family.
Just saying,
I want you. I want to clone you.
Those that don't know, they're lost, Geraldo, because they don't know where they were at. They don't understand the struggle, and they're constantly brainwashed and told that they're.
But a lot of the brainwashing, don't you agree, is like from the hip hop community and telling them they got to be bad to be good. They got to, you know, even watching Empire, a great show on Fox. You know, you watch it and there's all kinds of violence and, you know, it just seems that there's a lot of mixed messages
well,
going
saying,
on now.
But let me just allow in terms of Empire, one of the things that's going on with the black community now, the same that's always went on any community, people have a choice. There's Blackish, which is a great comedy.
I love Blackish.
Very funny.
That's my favorite new show.
Empire. So you have a choice. I mean, in terms of what goes on in Empire, that's a reality in a lot of ways, but there's a whole lot of other things that's going on.
I don't think Empire is a reality. I think that it's a reality maybe for one half of 1/10 of 1%.
No.
Maybe.
What I'm saying is that a reality not only for blacks, a reality in this nation, period. All right? Let's be real.
I gotta let you go, Laura, but you're wonderful and don't be a stranger. We like you around here. And I might as well get my other reg from Forest Hills and Stan. You want to comment on what Laura just said?
No, I don't want to comment on what Laura said. I want to comment on what you've been saying for weeks, and you've been absolutely correct. There is a systematic situation going on in this country for the last 40 years of self-segregation. Voluntarily, the Supreme Court passed the case, separate but equal, doesn't exist. It does exist, and it continues. Many groups, many African-American groups, by themselves, are self-segregating. It's happening in many southern areas. As they get economically better, they say, you know, I've had enough of this civil rights thing. I want to live. I don't want the headaches anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. Howard University, one of the great colleges in this country, black-oriented, there may be some whites going there, has developed because it educates black people for themselves. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's also Christian universities that do self-segregation. I want to live among Christian youth, but want to live with themselves. We are not a homogeneous society. We are a society that basically lets people do to a large extent. We pass laws, but look what's going on.
I agree, and I lament it. I don't like self-segregation. Thank you, Stan. I really don't. I'm an old-style integrationist. I want everyone to be successful. I want everyone to live in my building as long as you can afford the rent. You know, this is a world where I lament the kind of isolationism and the kind of gross old-fashioned segregation that is thought of by these fraternity boys. All right, enough about race. I think that our audience is pretty much reflective, Noam, of that CNN poll. I think that it's fair to say that, you know, 4 out of 10 believe race relations are worse. 15% say they're better, and the rest are or say it's about the same under President Obama. But I got to move on. I got to go to Hillary now because she is, I think, the odds-on favorite to be the next president of the United States unless the Republicans nominate Jeb Bush. I mean, just think to yourself, what Republican can beat her? Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, Mike Huckabee, Scott Walker, they have zero chance. Rick Santorum, zero chance. Newt Gingrich, zero chance of beating Hillary. You know, you may say you're bored, Clinton, Bush, again, Jeb Bush is the only one that can beat her. He's the only Republican who has the courage to stand up on the issue of immigration. He's got a Mexican wife. His son is very fluent in terms of Spanish and English and is also the highway commissioner in Texas. I think Jeb is the only one. But about these emails, and this is what I want to talk to you about, and I appreciate you calling in already, 866-RLO, to voice your opinion about this House Select Committee investigating Benghazi that has now discovered this whole private email server, and they have, you know, they are demanding and alleging that there are months and months of emails missing. They are not releasing some of the emails they already have. Hillary, though, is saying she wants to release all of them. I don't know if that's just talk. The Republicans apparently balking at Hillary's offer of all of her emails. I don't know if she's put substance in the, to back up her comment that she wants all these emails released. I don't know what the emails say, but if the emails are retrievable under the law as it existed before 2014, she has committed no crime. No crime unless she has, in some malicious way destroyed the emails, and I just can't imagine she'd be that stupid. The thing about an email is, you know, I send you an email. I can delete it. I can destroy my computer. I can do anything I want. But the fact that I have sent it to another computer means it's in some other server. It is undoubtedly going to come out if it really exists and it is negative. So my bottom line is I think that this is just maybe it's reminding everybody of all the Clinton hubris, along with that portrait of Bill Clinton with the shadow of the Monica Lewinsky dress and all that. I think maybe more problematic for the First Lady, for the former Secretary of State, former Senator Hillary Clinton, is the fact that the Clinton Family Foundation has been accepting donations from some of these repressive regimes or very questionable, high-rolling donors. I think maybe therein lies some more substantive problems, but that's well out of the scope of this House Select Committee investigating Benghazi, which if it doesn't want to be considered just a bunch of witch hunters, had better hone its investigation and zero in on exactly what it is they suspect. But so far they have not impressed me, and I state again, then you can take this to the bank. Geraldo says Hillary will be the next president, absent, some miracle on the GOP side where they could put aside their attempts to social engineer attribute to the American people one set of values. If they don't try to impose their social values and they nominate someone like Jeb Bush, I think that she can be beaten, but only if they're that sensible. That at least is Geraldo's prediction here on 77 WABC. What does Jim say? Thanks for calling, Jim. What's up?
Yes, Geraldo.
You there, Jim? Oh, did I lose you? Sorry, buddy. I lost him. We'll come back another time. Here is, let me take another Hillary call. Here's Robert in Pennsylvania. What's up, Robert?
Hi, Geraldo. I love your show. Called multiple times. With regard to the Clinton political machine, I don't know why nothing sticks to them. And you could go through, and I'm not going to waste my time talking to you about everything that's come up, but nothing ever sticks to them. And you could say, to a certain extent, it's the media and it's their political surroundings. They're well insulated, and that's the thing. And I
I think the media would love to get a juicy Hillary Clinton story. The emails were seized on by a lot of people. The New York Times is editorialized about it. Certainly the Wall Street Journal, you might expect that. But
so who's at the top
I just
of
don't
that?
See anything, any there. I mean, it seems
it's not gonna
seedy.
Stick because the people that read the mainstream media are like, ah, it's just Hillary. It's kind of like the kid that, you know, is...
don't you agree with my basic point, though, that Jeb Bush is the only one who can beat her? Or do you have a better idea?
I really feel like the people that should rise to the top go about it the wrong way. And I'm a staunch conservative, but I...
And yet, I notice you haven't named anybody.
Well, because Ben Carson could have been...
Ah, come on.
If 2 years ago he ran for a public office.
How's Ben Carson going to get elected when you think that being gay is a choice that only happens to people in jail? I mean, it's kind of stupid.
But Geraldo, listen to me.
I mean, that's
on the
that's,
opposite side.
But Hillary doesn't make statements like that. She doesn't make statements like that. I think that I don't know, man. I just think that you can't beat Hillary with bull. You can't. You're gonna have to beat her with substance. I don't see it so far. All right. We've got a good jobs number coming up. The market is recovering from Friday's disaster. It was up last time I checked. Was up 90. I'll check back before we come back. But see what the economic situation is. I'll take a couple of more Hillary calls, but I really have to get to BB before the show is over. And what did you think? Did you see Glee? No, did you
I
see
did.
It?
You were great.
Did you see it? You're
yeah,
really?
I did. I sat. You know, it's funny. I'll tell you what. I had never seen the show before, but I sat down Friday night and I watched it. And you were hysterical.
It's pretty funny stuff.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues. Geraldo, today and every day. 77 WABC.
Welcome back, 77 WABC. I'm Geraldo, along with Noam Layden. Did you see Saturday Night Live? It was hilarious. Kate McKinnon, the one who plays Hillary Clinton, is going to be a great Hillary, assuming the former first lady goes through with her run, as now appears virtually certain. So here is Saturday Night Live. Here's Hillary.
Recently, it was revealed that while I was Secretary of State, I did not use a government email. I used a personal one, leading many to believe I was hiding scandalous or incriminating emails. Nice try. Those emails are clean as a whistle. This is not how Hillary Clinton goes down. I mean, what did you think my email said? Hi, it's Hillary. I really screwed up on Benghazi today. There will be no mistakes in my rise to the top if I decide to run. Who knows? And in emails to Bill, the only thing you'll dig up is a little bit of mature romance. Take a look at this sexy email I sent him on our anniversary. Dear sir or madam, congratulations on your continued marital success. I would like to schedule a sit-down at your earliest convenience. Regards, the office of Hillary Clinton.
I don't know, man. I think that mocking it diminishes the charge, and I don't think it's going anywhere. I mean, you got an opinion?
You know, I wonder, and I've heard this is not an original idea on my part, but, you know, Hillary fatigue. She's been around for so long. Does the younger generation connect with her? Are older people just tired of her? You know, that's kind of what happened in 2008. Is it going to even be more so this time around?
I tell you this, and this was my experience from doing The Apprentice. The women's movement is real. That women really feel this whole girl power, woman power thing. They are resentful about the glass ceiling. They are, they are worried about people infringing on Roe v. Wade and a lot of other aspects. There is a true sense, as there was, I believe, with Barack Obama. Barack Obama ran out of turn. Barack Obama should have waited. Hillary Clinton should have been the Democrat for two terms, and Barack Obama the vice president. Then he would have been running this time for the first time as president. That would have been the natural order. But he saw an opportunity for himself in 2008. He took it, and it was a historic opportunity. People were totally tuned in, despite His relatively thin resume. They seized on the opportunity to elect the first black president, and I'm glad they did. I voted for him twice, as everyone knows, sometimes to my dismay, but other times I'm proud of the vote. And I believe that this is the time when the women finally will get it together. You say there's a fatigue. I would submit to you, Noam Layden, that the people who are fatigued, generally speaking, are men over the age of 40, maybe even over the age of 50, maybe even over the age of 60. I think older men, senior men, hate Hillary Clinton. They've grown up with her. Now they're growing old with her. She is of a certain age. It's absolutely true. And society is much more forgiving of men of a certain age than women of a certain age, generally speaking. But going back to my original point, I think that women are so eager now to have a female, and she's the only one that has a shot. Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, is really talk about thin resumes. She may be attractive to the hard left wing of the party. She has very little, as far as I can see, credibility in terms of her ability to fundraise or her relationship to various foreign governments and all the rest of it. Hillary Clinton is deep. She's well-funded. They are battle-scarred and battle-tested. And as much as she generates an unpleasant vibe from a lot of guys, I think them that there is an inevitability. And I really do believe, and I don't want to be a shill for Jeb Bush, but and the Bush family, there is a boredom factor there. But I think when you look at the other candidates, they are so fringy in their own way. And you've got to be so crazy to win the Republican nomination. You've got to, your politics on immigration and so forth have to be so far right that you, it makes you almost unelectable. I think that you better get used to 4 years of Hillary at least now.
Don't you think, though, the Democrats have to run somebody against her during the primary season? Doesn't she have to go into a battle? Because if she comes out of that thing, as some people say, coronated, even to the people who might be middle of the road, they may not like
who?
That.
Like that guy O'Malley from Maryland? Who did you ever hear from him before?
I had only because I grew up in that area. But yeah, no, outside of Washington, D.C. area, people do not know who he is.
We don't know him. I don't know what he knows, who he knows, how good he's been. I mean, he's a relatively handsome guy, but I don't think that – why would anybody vote for O'Malley just because he's new, you know, as opposed to Hillary, who's old? I don't see it happening. All right, so – I want very much, or let me just say this. I am deeply distressed as a reporting veteran in the Middle East. I am deeply distressed by what I now see was a con job by Bibi Netanyahu before the Congress of the United States. It was a con job. He made a great speech about nothing. When you think about it, Bibi Netanyahu was complaining about Iran getting a nuclear weapon or starting to getting a nuclear weapon at the end of a 10-year sunset provision or something like that in terms of the negotiations going on in Switzerland now. But why did he bring up Iran in the sense that Iran is the big boogeyman when it comes to America's safety and security and the life going on as we know it, when all around him, Bibi knows, he's smart enough to know that what you are seeing now with ISIS and Iran, just to, you know, I don't want to go through the bushes again, Iran, this Shiite country, Persia, been around forever, what does Iran want? Iran wants hegemony. Iran wants what Iran wants, but ISIS wants the destruction of the world as we know it. ISIS, the Sunni extremist movement, they're ransacking 3,000-year-old archaeological treasures. They're raping, they're murdering, they're looting, they're pillaging. So they're destroying history, and they're destroying the future of the region. And how could Bibi be blind to ISIS as the existential threat? It's not about Iran.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
There is nothing quite as wonderful as money. There is nothing quite as beautiful as cash. Some people say it's folly, but I'd rather have the lolly. With money you can make a splash.
My financial experts for Monty Python. Money, money, money. So the Dow's up 123, recovering from the disastrous 300-point drop on Friday. Why did it go down? Why is it going up? I have no earthly idea. Larry Kudlow, though, does. He's got a great show here on 77 WABC. You know Larry from CNBC and elsewhere. You know, a great mind. So a couple of things, Larry. First of all, why did the Dow go down? Why is it going up?
Well, you've got all these jockeys, these Wall Street investment hedge fund jockeys that are making the case, or at least they did Friday when you had a 300,000 jobs increase, that strong growth is actually bad and more jobs is actually bad because it'll mean the Fed's going to raise interest rates faster and higher.
I'm so bored with that discussion. I mean, it's right. Ridiculous.
It is the last three or four decades, I've tried to make the case that more people working is a good thing.
Really?
It doesn't cause.
And raising the minimum wages also. All right, let me ask you a specific.
I don't want to argue that
because I want to, I feel very strongly the minimum wage should be $15. But that's another story. Larry, tell me about Apple and this watch thing. Is this a lemon or is this a real great deal that everyone is going to be rushing to get it the way they rush to get iPhones and iPads?
I think it's prime rib. I think your second one. Look, for $350, they're going to sell you this attractive watch, which connects to your iPhone and all the applications and the internet. They may sell 40 million of these things. I think it's terrific. And it puts them in the new product market and gives them a lot of open field running. And it's not bad looking. I mean, it has a certain fashionista look to it. So you think
40 million, is that a lot? I mean, I don't know.
That's a ton.
So Apple million. Stocks, now they're part of the Dow. Will that help the, Dow funds? What does that do?
Yeah, it probably will. I mean, look, Apple's almost $128 today. It's up a percentage point. It's been a great stock. I mean, it's gone from, 50 to almost 130 in the last couple of years. The guy running it, Tim Cook, is good. And I just think you can't, putting it in the Dow, that just makes the Dow more representative of the overall market because it's in the S&P and it's in the NASDAQ, so why not the Dow?
And so let's leave this segment with Larry Kudlow, the genius of Wall Street, with some advice. If you are a 60-year-old person, you've got your money all in equities, you're in good shape or bad shape?
I think you're in pretty good shape. At 60 years old, you might want to have some cash on the table. All right, don't buy bonds, but you might want to have some cash on.
Like what? Where do you keep the cash? In the pillow?
Unfortunately, you're going to get a low interest rate of 1%, but sometimes it's better to be safe than sorry. If you're 60 and you're approaching retirement, me, I'm all in the equity market. I'm in my mid-60s. I think any dips right now or any corrections, you ought to come in and buy them because I think that the outlook for the profits is good. The strong dollar is good. Low oil prices is good. Geraldo, more people working is good.
Let me ask you this. You're a Republican. I'm a Republican.
Right.
Is it time for us to concede that the 44th president has done a pretty good job with the economy in the United States?
You know what? I'll concede that the resilient, basically free market business sector has done a good job. And I will concede that lower oil and gas prices, which Obama opposed, has done a good job. But no, I don't think President Obama has particularly helped the economy. I think the economy is helping the economy. And I also think we ought to grow faster. Right? We ought to be growing at 4.5%.
And which of the candidates for the Republican side do you think hold the best prospect of being the same kind of free enterprisers that we are?
Well, that is a good question. Right now, I would have to say, without details, most of them.
You kidding me? Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, Mike Huckabee,
yeah.
Scott Walker?
Yeah. I'm a little skeptical of Huck. I like him very much, but I'm a little
Scott Walker's big achievement is he's made Wisconsin another right-to-work state.
Well, you know, he actually didn't push that. His legislature did. But I happen to be in favor of right-to-work states. But Walker's a growth guy. Kasich is a growth guy. Rick Perry's a growth guy.
Do you agree with me that Jeb Bush is the only one that could beat Hillary?
No, I don't think we can possibly know that. impossible. There's no way we can know that, right?
I'm prescient.
This is a great horse race. This is a great horse race.
Well, let the races begin.
Hillary's beating Hillary here.
I think that's wishful thinking right there, Larry. But I appreciate you coming on. Thanks. I'm not selling.
All right, buddy. Don't.
Thank you, buddy. All right. All right. Now, as I was saying about Beebe, before I wanted that, I wanted that stock market report because everybody was so gloomy on Friday, a 300-point drop. Now half of it has been recovered already. It's just like they put out the bad word about the stock market so they could buy on the dip. Anyway, a lot of people don't like the stock market because it's run by these racketeers, but that's another story. Bibi Netanyahu. I can't get over the fact that he's leading the U.S. astray. I don't have a lot of time in this segment to tell you about it, but I urge you to remember the fight against ISIS. We are not fighting Iran. Iranian generals are leading the charge against ISIS in Iraq. Do I like that? Not particularly, but the reason the Iranian generals are leading the charge against ISIS in Iraq is because U.S. generals aren't there. The president of the United States, who promised that he was going to degrade and then destroy ISIS, ladies and gentlemen, has been tepid in his response to ISIS. In the same way I praise him, the president, for the economy, I lament his inaction against ISIS in the Middle East. It is wrong of the president to promise that he's going to destroy ISIS, this malignant organization, these gangsters, these savages, and then, for example, not provide the offensive going on in Iraq right now with American air support. How can they have their first major offensive against ISIS in Iraq? We've pledged to destroy ISIS, and we're not helping Iraq in this fight. How could that be? It is absolute BS that Iran is our threat. Iran wants to preserve its 3,000-year or 4,000-year history. ISIS wants to destroy history in the same way they are destroying, raping, murdering, pillaging. Please refer on my Geraldo.com to my 13-point battle plan for ISIS. We've got to take this seriously. You heard they arrested another knucklehead. It was a guy from Ohio that was going to kill the president. He was self-motivated, communicating on the internet with these ISIS, thugs on the internet. It is about ISIS, this fight. We've got to fight them. The president has to stop this lukewarm approach. You've got to get what Bibi said about Iran out of your minds. That negotiation will go on just as it has gone on. Fareed Zakaria had a great column about Bibi Netanyahu being wrong about Iran for the last 25 years. You know, I believe that Fareed Zakaria, and I don't agree with everything he says. I think he's right about this. The enemy is ISIS. The United States should concentrate on that. I mean, I would love to have a world leader come and tell us what ISIS is doing, what ISIS is doing to the Christian community in the Middle East. Not the what Iran hasn't done it. You know, there are working synagogues in Iran. Iran is not institutionally anti-Semitic. I mean, the attacks that Iran perpetrated over the years, horrible, horrible. The one in Buenos Aires, horrible. The one against the Marines in 1983 in Lebanon, I was there, horrible. But as far as I know, they haven't happened in 25 years, more or less. But we have seen Sunni Muslim extremism, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, ISIS. That's the enemy. That's who we've been fighting. That's who bombed the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. That's who bombed our embassies in Africa. That's who bombed the USS Cole. Not the Iranians, not the Shiites, the Sunni Muslim extremists. We have been sold a bill of goods by Bibi Netanyahu. We have to be clear about this. The enemy that's most urgent for the West to defeat is ISIS. The president of the United States is piddling along when he should be aggressively designing a battle plan to defeat this enemy. It is so frustrating to see how we are being led like lambs by jingoistic rhetoric about the Holocaust and so forth. A politician running for office, using the Congress of the United States to divert our attention from the real enemy, ISIS. Who cut the heads off our people? Who burned that pilot alive? Who's raping nuns and all the rest of that? And destroying in a way that it just, I'm an archaeological buff. I love history. To see them destroyed, and I saw so much of it when I spent so much time in Iraq. So much of the incredible history there. And to see them knocking over those irreplaceable statues and so forth. It reminds me of Afghanistan, Bamiyan, just before the Afghan war, when they destroyed those big Buddhas that they had in Afghanistan. Remember when the Taliban did that? Helped turn all world opinion against the Taliban. All of world opinion should see they are destroying history now. They are demanding that the only history that exists is the history of the Sunni Muslim faith. So they're starting history from the year 700 and wiping out everything before it and anything after it that diverts from their credo. They're the enemies of civilization.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
He spent 18 years as the TV editor for the New York Post. Now he's the columnist for MediaPost.com. The author, most recently, of Jerk, How I Wasted My Time Watching Television. I've asked him to review my Glee performance. We welcome Adam Buckman to the program. How you doing, Adam?
Fine, Geraldo. Great to be speaking with you, and congratulations on this primetime appearance last Friday night.
And would you, now tell me honest, I'm not looking to be stroked, and I'm not looking to be overly harshly raked over the coals, but honestly, what do you think?
Well, it was the role you were born to play, which is yourself, basically. I mean, let's face it. You know, you as a news person, you are a strong enough brand that people see your face and they go, okay, there's Geraldo. He's in this over-the-top interview with the Jane Lynch character, Sue Sylvester, on Glee. And I would say, and again, not overly flattering at you, but I think you were rightly cast in the role, and I was also impressed by a couple of things. One was the length of time that you were on. I mean, this may be one of the longest sequences you've personally enjoyed in a show of this type. Is that?
Oh, it is. It is definitely.
And in addition,
it grew organically when I got there. I have to say that.
Well, was that because of you sort of continuing the interview, or did the writer say this looks pretty good? Let's continue.
It was the latter. They decided to bring in Carol Burnett and stretch it that way. And it really, I enjoyed it. But let me ask you. I only have a couple of minutes with Adam Buckman, columnist for MediaPost.com, longtime New York Post TV critic. All this attention played to Brian Williams' ambitions to do, you know, it's not a too big a jump, but editorially, to do things like the David Letterman show, the Jay Leno show, or to appear in these other entertainment. I mean, is this real, or is this just jumping on and, piling on to poor Brian Williams?
I have no reason to doubt that he may have suggested over dinner or cocktails to someone in positions of power that he might enjoy being considered as the replacement for Letterman or the replacement for Leno. The troubling part of it is that at that level of network news, we still expect our news anchors to be, you know, serious, sober people, kind of like Scott Pelley on CBS. We never would have thought of him thinking of himself as a replacement for Letterman. And so it seems like Brian may have been distracted from the business of being the serious newsman, and who knows whether that resulted in his exaggerating these stories as if he was, you know, Ted Baxter or Ron Burgundy instead of Edward R. Murrow.
That's fascinating. Adam Buckman, my guest, the longtime media critic for the New York Post, the author, Jerk, How I Wasted My Life Watching Television. Do you really think of yourself as a jerk for that?
Well, the jerk title comes from how some readers reacted to my columns in the New York Post, calling me a jerk and other names which we can't say on the radio.
I get you. Going back to Brian Williams, is it almost a psychological, autopsy now? What's going on?
Well, I don't know. I mean, one of the problems with the so-called journalism of this story is that nobody has been able to sit down with Brian and ask him, who is the primary source of what happened, Brian, why did you do this? And what he's doing, apparently, according to the reports, is trying to craft the right way to reemerge with statements that will somehow explain what he did in a believable way. And also
will Andy Lack rehire him, Adam Buckman?
I don't think so, but that remains to be seen. I really can't decide whether that's a good move or not.
I got you. I appreciate it, Adam Buckman. We'll talk more, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate you tuning us in today. I love you. Enjoy the beautiful weather. See you tomorrow.